This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire and this week presented by DoorDash and BetOnline.ag. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. It's time for the non-sports movie of the month, and this month we are talking Crazy Stupid Love, the star-studded 2011 rom-com, as kind of voted on by the Big Screen Sports Facebook group. It came in second during the vote that gave us Eurotrip last month, and me and my guest, Ben Cruz, decided that we needed to talk Crazy Stupid Love. It's a movie that we both love. Ben is a fellow Blue Wire podcaster. He's the co-host of the Two Jabronis with the Wrestling Podcast. Great time talking this movie. Great performances, some powerhouse scenes. It's a great cable movie. There is always something that you have to look forward to in this one. It's also got some stuff that hasn't aged well. It was great having Ben on. Really looking forward to everyone listening to this one. Quick programming, some housekeeping notes for next month. Next month is Rocktober. I've been getting questions about doing the Rocky franchise since pretty much I started this podcast. So in October, going to do Rocky-themed episodes and cap it off by covering Rocky 1, the original, the best picture winner, Sly Stallone. Looking forward to that. If you're not yet subscribed to get all of Rocktober and the rest of the Big Screen Sports, pretty much evergreen content on your podcast feed, you can always go back, listen to old episodes. They all hold up. Leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. I will read out all new 5-star reviews. Thanks to everyone who's already left one. And with that, let's talk this month's non-sports movie, Crazy Stupid Love, with my guest, Ben Cruz. All right, joining me on this month's non-sports episode of Big Screen Sports, he is the host of the Two Jabronis with the Wrestling Podcast on the Blue Wire Network, Ben Cruz. Ben, thanks so much for joining Big Screen Sports.
Kyle, thank you so much for having me on, man. Two things right off the bat. One, I've done almost 100 episodes of Two Jabronis and a couple of others, like Light Years. I've guessed it on there. Today was the first day my wife asked me how the pod was going to be. she is so into this movie, and the first time she's shown interest in anything I've been doing podcast wise. Two, I reached out to Ryan Gosling personally for a makeover and just trying to get into the spirit to talk to you about this, and he declined. So
I felt like he would. Did you guys do your rewatch last night like we did? This movie is for everyone listening. This movie is available to stream on HBO, which is great.
Right. Yeah, we definitely did another rewatch. It has to be more than the 10th time we've seen this movie. It is, whatever time this was, it played even better than I remember it.
Well, and the thing we'll get into is this is a great cable movie because it's on cable all the time. But before we dive right into it, tell the folks about your podcast, where they can find it. Tell the folks.
Yeah, no, so I'm the co-host of Two Jabronis with the Wrestling Podcast. For all you wrestling fans out there, I co-host the podcast with my tag team partner, Jeremy Loss, aka the David Lindhagen of our podcast. And you can find us on the Blue Wire Network as well. We've got a couple wrestling pods on the network now, but I'm happy to say we were the first. I was able to convince KJ, Kevin Jones, the Boss Man, to give us a shot early on, and now we're surrounded by a lot of great wrestling pods. But you can find us wherever you download your podcasts. So after you hear us talking about Crazy Stupid Love, you should go check out Two Jabronis of the Wrestling Podcasts wherever you get your pods, or on YouTube. We started putting our face out there. Much to the chagrin of our wives.
you're braver than me on that one. Much braver than me. So with non-sports movies, I usually leave it up to a vote for the Big Screen Sports Facebook group. Like I think last month they had picked Eurotrip. What came in second in that poll was Crazy Stupid Love, and I think you and I exchanged some messages on this one and decided we're not going to put it up to a poll. We're just going to take second place. Crazy Stupid Love is the 2011 comedy. A middle-aged husband's life changes dramatically when his wife asks him for a divorce. He seeks to rediscover his manhood with the help of newfound friend Jacob, learning to pick up girls at bars. It starred Steve Carell, Julianne Moore, Emma Stone, and a Golden Globe-nominated performance from Ryan Gosling. Got a 79% on Rotten Tomatoes, grossed $142 million worldwide. And like I said, this movie seems to be on cable every single weekend. Ben, for you, is this a Hall of Fame, all-star starter, or bench warmer movie?
So I really, really wanted to give it Hall of Fame. I enjoyed that much. But I ended up going with all-star. I think it's a really, really good romantic comedy. A lot of levels to it. And it avoids some of the typical romantic comedy tropes. You know, it starts with a very unfunny heartbreak, right? Like, she does it in public. She admits to an affair. There's like a weird, inappropriate relationship sprinkled in there with Jessica and Cal, or at least her feelings towards Cal. So you're wondering at the beginning, like, whoa, this has the ingredients for like a dark comedy, but it ends up being a really, really good romantic comedy. And like, I have some issues with Cal's reaction at the end to Jacob and Hannah's relationship, but other than that, it hits all the right marks. And for that, given it the all-star, dare I say, a borderline Hall of Fame movie, though.
Yeah, I would say it's an all-star movie for me. It's a Hall of Fame cable movie because it's always on, and while it's not perfect, it's got the great scenes are spaced out enough that there's going to be something good coming up within the next couple commercials. It's definitely got its warts. It's got the edge it kind of needed to with a new age romantic comedy. Like, it's arguably one of the best rom-coms of the last decade, because that genre has kind of changed a little bit. There's not as much of that classic, like, You've Got Mail, When Harry Met Sally stuff coming out. You know, it's got heart, it's got comedy, it's got a genuine coolness from Gosling. But like, that being said, I gave it 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. It might be more enjoyable than it is really good. I can't give a Hall of Fame or anything like 4+ stars on Letterboxd to a movie where I feel the need to fast forward through a couple parts. That's my caveat there.
It ran a little long. I don't remember it being that long. It's a firm 2 hours, but also it also kind of flew by. Maybe that's just because, to your point, it is a very enjoyable movie and you don't realize it. But there are some points where it does drag and you're like, oh, I could have done without that, just to kind of get things moving, you know?
Yeah, and just some genuinely uncomfortable stuff. But I've got two opening questions for you. So this one comes out in 2011, and it is a huge 2011 for Ryan Gosling. And he does this. He does Drive, which is a movie I revere. I love Drive. And he does Ides of March, which is one of the better like political thrillers of the past 20 years. Do you have a favorite Gosling movie from 2011?
Oh, man. I'm gonna say it's this because we're talking about this movie, but I just feel like this movie encapsulated Ryan Gosling like as a whole. Like, I've been a big fan of his since the Breaker High days. I don't even know if people know what that show is. I was living in Canada at the time. He was on the show called Breaker High. It was about a high school that was on a boat. That was the premise of the show. He played like this lovable loser. And he was incredible there. And as he got further along in his career, you know, he was Young Hercules. I don't even know if people saw that. Like, I watched Young Hercules because it was Ryan Gosling, not because I was a huge Hercules fan. You know what I mean?
So you've been on the Gosling train for a long time.
Oh, man. I don't want anyone to accuse me of ever joining the Ryan Gosling bandwagon. You know, I've been a day one supporter, right? Like, I feel like I'm a Warriors fan, right? And everyone, as a Warriors fan, people are like, oh, you just started being a fan, you know, when they won their first championship. And I'm like, no, I was there when they freaking lost at the buzzer to the Oklahoma City Thunder when they had won like 20 games. You know what I mean? Like, I still remember that Bart ride home. So I've seen the bad, and now I am living in the good. So Crazy Stupid Love for me was just all Gosling. Like, all of his strength just came forward in this movie, and that's what makes this movie so rewatchable, right? And why you enjoy it every single time.
I agree that he is the reason it's rewatchable. Like, for yep. sure. Like, you've been on the Gosling bandwagon since he was getting burned at burned on cornerback and Remember the Titans, but this
sure terrible cornerback, terrible safety,
awful.
Good guy though, good teammate,
complete liability,
not racist. So
that's a big, you know, that's a win in that
big
movie.
big one.
That's a win for me. Like, this is a great performance, and I think this is like, this kind of leads to La La Land and Gangster Squad, the kind of roles he gets after this. I am taking Drive. I love Drive, and I love the Eyes of March
Drive's
too.
Great.
But his 2011 is just, it's fantastic. It is just an outstanding. If you told me you got to pick one actor's a single year for one actor, like, those movies are all you can watch for the rest of your life. That's not a bad pick. Those three,
right? No, that's an. I mean, if an actor had that in their career, right? Those three movies, they'd be beyond happy. He had that in a single year, which is insane.
That's just crazy.
Yeah.
I got one more question for you.
Okay.
What is the biggest cringe part of this movie? I will give you five nominations.
Okay.
Carell at the bar, letting everyone know that his wife was cheating on him right at the beginning.
Okay.
When Carell falls into Gosling's junk in the sauna, like, just directly onto his penis, which is
it makes
wild
the sound.
Yeah.
It makes the weird sound. Yeah.
Robbie doing the public performance, declaring his love for Jessica. In the same vein, Robbie's grad speech. And then right after that speech, Jessica giving Robbie her nudes.
Oh, so this one for me isn't even close. And it's Jessica giving Robbie the nudes, because I'd actually forgotten about that. I thought, all in my head, I just remember it as he says, you'll like me when I'm older because I'm going to look like my dad. And then she kisses him on the cheek, and that's about it. I, for some reason, maybe I just erased this from my brain, but her giving the nudes that she had meant for Cal to his son, who is only about to enter high school. Oh my God, man. Like, there is just no level of awkwardness. Like, can you imagine if anyone in Robbie's family finds that envelope? Like, they had just gone through this with, you know, that whole scene in the backyard. So that, for me, took the cake. That was crazy.
I mean, that's red flag central. Robbie, though, is also not letting those things out of his sight. They're not being found.
He's finding the
hiding spot for those.
He's a 14-year-old boy, right? He's going to hide those. He's going to dig a hole in his room with a real shovel and bury it in there. He's going to create, like, a Shawshank tunnel just to get to them.
Absolutely.
It was... Yeah.
couple things I pulled from the IMDb trivia I thought were funny. Ben, are you an Office fan?
Oh, 1,000%. Love The Office.
The nameplate on Emily Weaver's desk had a second line, associate to the vice president.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
That's fantastic. Great stuff.
I love that.
Steve Carell has said that he hates the title of this film, stating that he couldn't imagine a group of college guys saying, Five Tickets to Crazy Stupid Love, Please. One of the working titles Carell preferred was The Wingman, which he felt was a boring title but more accurately described the film's plot. I actually love this movie's title.
I do too. The Wingman, that could have been about a pilot.
That also sounds right? like a bad Vince Vaughn comedy from the same era.
Right. And I like the fact that it's not super clear what the movie's about. Right, I remember going to the theater with my then girlfriend, my now wife, to watch this movie, and it was because of Carell and Gosling, right? Those are the two big draws. But, you know, looking at the poster, which I believe is it's that scene with him and Marissa Tomei, right, where he's on the couch,
yeah,
and it's like,
yeah,
the he's shot like, between yeah, her legs,
yeah,
and you see it just says Crazy Stupid Love. I love the fact that it didn't give away anything. I remember. And we'll talk about some really good scenes later, but that is why I think I was so surprised by some of the stuff that happens, because I had honestly come into the movie with no expectations other than Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell are in this movie, so I am in.
Same. I thought they marketed it really well. They did it as the it was Steve Carell's getting a divorce and Ryan Gosling's, you know, bringing his manhood back or whatever, that whole thing. Which is a very surface level look at this movie, but there's a lot to unpack in it. So I thought it was marketed very well. It also had a powerhouse cast. The cast includes 3 Oscar winners, Julianne Moore, Emma Stone, and Marissa Tomei, and 2 Oscar nominees, Steve Carell and Ryan Gosling. And then Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone would later appear in Gangster Squad and La La Land. In all 3 films, they play a couple. Emma Stone famously won an Oscar for La La Land, and then Warren Beatty sought to give that Oscar to La La Land again instead of Moonlight.
Yeah, I mean, the cast of this movie, and it didn't really dawn on me, like, I knew who was in the movie, it didn't dawn on me how elite the top 4 stars of this movie are, right? Like Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Julianne Moore, Emma Stone. I mean, that could be in the discussion of like an all-time top 4, right? It's not going to be, but those 4 are all incredible actors and actresses. And then you have Marissa Tomei and Kevin Bacon off the bench. Man, this movie had depth. You know what I mean? And it was just a phenomenal, great casting.
And it's part of a level up for Emma Stone. Emma Stone had quite the 2011 too. She does this and she does The Help, which hasn't aged as well. The Help is kind of looked down on now, but it was a big movie for her, and The Help was was well received at the time. So it's part of the same kind of level up as Gosling had with her 2011. But I want to roll into the best scene. And for me, this movie has 3 big scenes. Like, part of it being the cable movie is I need to catch... There are 3 scenes that I want to catch in this one. I listed a few more in best scene just because I do want to talk about some of these. But for me the decision for which one is the best is down to 3. But the intro scene, I thought, is really good. I love that the movie gets right to it. They're getting divorced right away. Robbie gets caught jerking right away. You hear David Lindhagen's name right away. When Carell jumps out of the car, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah. That you could have told me he did his own stunt, and I would have bought it. It was that good.
It's good. The next one I have is when Gosling first calls Cal over and takes him under his wing at the bar. He dresses him down with just like this incredible casual confidence. And he sets up the movie, the trailer version of the movie, which is like, I'm going to help you, you know, get your manhood back. But there's also the foreshadowing there of you remind me of someone, which then you unpack later in the movie, why Gosling's psyche is the way it is.
Right. So I didn't actually realize that he was kind of talking about his dad until about like the 8th or 7th rewatch, when my wife was like, she just kind of said out loud, oh, he's talking about his dad. And then she'd never said that before during any of our previous viewings of this. And I was like, no, come on. I thought he was just being super vague. And then eventually, once he starts talking to Hannah about his dad later, you know, when they're just hanging out in his bed and they're talking, it all just kind of came together. And it was this aha moment that I'll never forget. So it was a... love that. I agree. Great scene.
Yeah, you see, this movie's got more depth that second time you watch it. Because when the first time you watch it, that's flying, and probably the next few times, that little part is flying over your head. The next scene I have, and is one of these like haymaker 3 scenes that is all about this movie, is the makeover scene. I almost have no words about this scene, about how good it is.
Okay. All right.
One of the best parts about being a guy your age, and frankly, there aren't many, so you should really take full advantage of it. And then you can rebuild your entire wardrobe with like 16 items. Credit card.
What?
You see, the problem is that your head has like the proportions of like a styrofoam peanut.
Oh, it is really, really good. And I think for me, it's like in romantic comedies, there's, you know, it's kind of a cliche trope, right? Like a classic makeover scene. I love the beginning of this scene specifically, where Cal enters and Jacob is just eating Sbarro's. Just the most confident I've ever seen anyone eating a slice of pizza.
Oh, yeah.
And then he drops one of my favorite lines, Jacob does, that I love to repeat to friends who have seen the movie. And it's just, are you Steve Jobs? I thought that was so funny.
Are you the billionaire founder of Apple Computers?
What do you mean? These are my 407s.
Oh, they're 407s. Can I see them?
Yeah. He's offered a lot of support.
Right.
Whoa, come on!
What are you, in a fraternity?
Are you insane?
Are you in a fraternity?
You could have hit somebody. What was that?
I'm asking you a question. You in a fraternity?
No.
Are you Steve Jobs?
What?
Hold on a second. Are you the billionaire owner of Apple Computers?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, you got no right to wear New Balance sneakers ever.
Of Apple Computers? And he has like this weird pseudo New York accent.
That's the one thing you can't place where Gosling is from in this movie.
Right. You're like, what are you doing, Gos? Not sure. And then him throwing the New Balance 407s off the balcony onto a group of people. You hear the commotion that he caused down below. Somehow didn't get kicked out of the mall. But the way they set it up was just incredible. And then that the whole makeover scene is... It's a fantastic, fantastic makeover scene.
Again, it's the casual confidence. Like, you have never met someone like Jacob, like Ryan Gosling's character. It
right.
is just the cheek slaps, picking up the hairstylist. It produces one of the all-time gifts, the face when he sees his wallet for the first time.
Right.
When he, like, second-guessed. It is, I have a question for you. If he came up to you, like you said earlier, if you reach out to him about the makeover, he comes up to you. When he comes up to Cal, how much money did you bring or whatever, average credit card. How much would you be comfortable letting Jacob make over your wardrobe? I'm a very cheap, stingy guy. I think I would hand him my card and say, like, you've got the limit.
Oh no, I'm letting it fly. Whatever he says goes, right? Like if I'm Cal, I'm already trusting this stranger who I've talked to in a bar for maybe 5 minutes with revamping my entire look. So if I'm already going there, I'm going the rest of the way. Like, here's my card, max it out. If there's something I don't like in here, I can return it. We're keeping all the receipts. So I'm this, and look, Cal is enthralled by Jacob's confidence too, right? Like, he wants to be on some level, some form of Jacob, because his confidence is just completely destroyed. So I am all in on this makeover. There's absolutely no amount of money that is scaring me at this point, because as long as he doesn't kill me, this stranger who I entrusted, it's all good. It's all good from here.
Absolutely. And kind of going back to what we were just talking about, where he's talking about his dad, this scene is almost strangely endearing in a way when you watch it through that lens of, like, this is his chance to help, the chance to help his dad that he never got. Or that he wished he could have got. It's kind of interesting to think about that psyche. But on that note, my second, the next scene up, and the one that is the second of the three that I think make this movie, are actually when Hannah goes home with Jacob, when Emma Stone goes home with Jacob. It is the first time you're taken behind the curtain with him. It is everything that we see of him is the picking up chicks, and then the stuff he's doing. He's telling Cal how you have to be. This is the first time you're actually, it breaks his wall a little bit. He makes it the old fashioned. You get the big move talk.
Okay, so then what do we do? What happens now? Like, logistically, what's your move?
What do you mean, what's my move?
What's your move? Like, what's your big move?
I got lots of moves.
What's your big move?
I'm not telling you my big move.
Tell me your move.
You're not ready for the big move.
Yes, I am. I want your big move.
You can't handle the big move, trust me.
Tell me a big move.
I work Dirty Dancing into the conversation.
Dirty Dancing?
Can I sit down, please?
Yeah.
Can I put back on my shirt?
No. Why Dirty Dancing? What do? Do we watch it?
You know the big move at the end of Dirty Dancing where Patrick Swayze picks up Jennifer Grey?
Yeah.
I can do that.
Okay.
So I tell girls I can do the move. I put on the song, Time of Your Life. I do the big move. And they always want to have sex with me.
Oh, my God. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
I agree. But it works every time.
It's like the first time, but the way he does it, it's like she has it. He like breaks his facade. It's really like right away. You can see like the casting for La La Land is happening right there in that scene.
No, I mean, that's a great point. Their chemistry is just wild in this movie. It's off the charts. And to your point of, you kind of see Jacob's facade breaking is when, and the ultimate break comes when he says, I work Dirty Dancing into the conversation, right? Like, every other encounter he's had with a girl that he brings home, he goes through the motions, right? He's just like an all-time great. He knows what he's got to do to get to the big game. But this is the first time someone's ever thrown him that wrench of, tell me what you do. And the way that he says it, the way that Gosling delivers that line is so funny to me, because you can tell, or he just makes it seem like Jacob is trying to hold in this secret just for him. Like, he enjoys having this secret. He enjoys having this game plan for these women. And for him to finally reveal that, that kind of sets the course for the rest of the evening, you know? And he's the one who ends up falling asleep instead of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the them talking in bed is just like, and when he says, ask me something personal about myself, you know, with the way he's saying that and why he's saying that, that has never happened with any of these women he's brought home. They have never, he hasn't talked, he probably has never talked about this stuff that he's talking about with his mom, you know, the stuff about his parents, you know, mom pretty cold, dad is sweet, lives his life, you know, but Jacob chooses at this point is living his life how his mom lived her life. It's honestly a beautiful scene.
It is. I was wondering if you thought this too. And yesterday might have been the first time I thought about it, because maybe I'm just getting older and this is the stuff that's really important to me. What is Jacob's job?
He inherited that money, because I think my fiance, when we were watching, asked the same thing. He talks about his dad did well in business and left me all this stuff. It sounds like he is just like, his job is picking up, going to the gym and then picking up chicks at night.
So, and that's crazy to me. And maybe, look, when this movie came out, what, almost 10 years ago? So back then you're like, oh yeah, that's the life I want. But now, you know, after you live life a little bit, you're like, I still think you need a job, even if your parents leave you money. And maybe that's just me not realizing it's a movie and assuming Jacob Palmer is a real person. I was just curious if anyone else was out there like, I get this dude has money, but it's not like he doesn't have a job. Like Mike Lowry in Bad Boys, his parents left him money. He was a cop. He was a badass cop. So I was just curious if Jacob Palmer had any, maybe he's a secret agent. I don't know. Maybe I'm just imagining things.
He would at least need a very significant hobby. If he was going to be one of the rich people who just doesn't contribute anything, he would at least have a hobby, like something to occupy his time during the day.
Right. Like, we don't see daytime Jacob. The first time we see daytime Jacob is during the reveal at the end. And that's the first time you see him out when the sun is out. Or I guess that and the makeover scene. But it just really made me wonder during the rewatch last night. Like, I assume he has a job, or maybe not. Maybe he just has that much money. And he does have a dope house. And, you know, his wardrobe is impeccable. He has $5,000 to spend on a massage chair that he doesn't use. So maybe he
doesn't
just
have to drive to the Brookstone. It's right there in his garage.
Right. He has a Brookstone in his living room.
Let's roll into my last nominee for best scene, and the third of my three scenes of when this movie is on cable. If I can hit all three of these, I'm a happy guy, and it is what I call the Cal Jacob Lindhagen affair. Gosling's face when he sees Cal might be my favorite moment of the movie. Like that look, he like stops in his tracks, sees Cal, and it's just like the, you know, and his weird like whatever accent he's doing. What are you doing here?
All right. Well, we may as well wait for your daughter.
She's right here.
No. I mean our other daughter.
Hello?
Nana!
Hi, guys.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hi.
What's going on?
Oh, I don't know. Some game. He won't let me take this dumb blindfold off.
Cal?
Is that him?
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
Wait, do you guys know each other?
What's going on?
What are you doing here?
Hey, Nana.
Hi, Robbie.
Hey, Nana.
Hi, cutie.
Jacob, it's so nice to meet you. I've heard so many wonderful things about you from Nana.
I'm sorry, what's a Nana?
I'm a Nana. You know, I couldn't say Hannah when I was little.
How do you know my dad? She couldn't say our H's at all.
Okay, I'm having trouble understanding what's going on right now.
Yeah, what are you doing here? Yeah. I distinctly remember watching this movie in the theaters. And that scene, I remember that's... Aside from Avengers Endgame, I don't know if I've ever been more surprised with an ending of a movie. Because like, there was a lot of characters, so I'm trying to like keep track of who's who. There was no part of me that thought Hannah was related to Steve Carell or Julianne Moore, right? So I was so shocked when that happened. I felt like Ryan Gosling in that moment where I'm looking at the screen, I'm like, holy shit. Right? Sorry, I don't know if you can cuss on
here. Oh, yeah. No, we're cussing.
So I'm curious, did you have any inkling at all that she was related to them?
No. And that's why, I mean, it is, when you see her, because you see her first, you see her before Gosling, right. And when you see her show up, you go, oh no. And you think, like, you should have seen this coming. You should have realized that was going to tie together, but she's off doing her own thing so much that you don't even think about it. And she's only mentioned in passing.
Do you think it's because I had this pseudo-realization last night while watching. Do you think you weren't expecting another turn because the first turn was the reveal that Cal had slept with Kate?
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the big teacher. I thought that was going to be the twist. Big drama.
Right, yeah.
And also okay. Jacob turning into trying to figure out, like, I thought it was going to be Cal was going to do the Miyake thing. I didn't right. realize it was all going to, but that scene, and you get John Carroll Lynch showing up as Jessica's dad, AKA, like, spoiler warning, like, have you seen Zodiac?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, John Carroll Lynch puts in a masterclass performance in David Fincher's Zodiac. Oh,
I'll put it on the list.
It's on Netflix. Like, when we get off, and you're West Coast, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you got a long night ahead of you.
All right, I'm in.
But yeah, he's great. And then when Kevin Bacon shows up is Lynn Hagen, one of the most endearing parts of the movie is when Gosling then sees, you know, they all see David Lynn Hagen. Everyone knows who it is. Gosling's first instinct is taking off his ring and going to punch him. You don't punch someone for someone else unless you genuinely care about that person. Like, he forgets that Cal had just been, like, telling him to break up with Hannah. And
right.
He sees Lynn Hagen. He sees red and he punches Lynn Hagen in the face. It's wonderful.
And the way he says, "Do you know how much pain you caused my friend?"
is you dumb son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's just so authentic. It comes from a place of real pain. And again, I guess this goes to your point earlier of, you know, with the makeover scene being Gosling making up for that time that he didn't get with his dad, he kind of sees Cal as like a fatherly figure, right? So he's just protecting him in that moment. And yeah, he just sees red and great punch. Great punching
solid,
from the gods.
Solid punch. Did you recognize who the police officer is who's taking their statements?
I recognize him from, is it Fast and the Furious?
It is. Yeah, he's Lance from Fast and the Furious, the cousin.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. There it is. So I knew I'd recognize him from somewhere.
The guy in the snakeskin pants. That's right. His cousin Lance.
Great callback.
What is your favorite scene in this movie? You had to pick a best scene. What's the one when you're on, you know, when it's on cable, you got to get to?
So I at least have to get to, or if there's one scene that I'm watching, I don't know if I can say it's the reveal at the end, because I feel like you need the whole movie to really get that full effect, you know? And so I will say, I think it's the first scene with Gosling and Carell. So the first Jacob Cal scene because Ryan Gosling he's in the middle of picking up another girl, right? And in the middle of this, which for any regular human being would take all the brain power and focus in the world, he decides to take a break. And
he literally puts her on hold.
Right. He's like, I'm going to save this guy's life. And so he says, can I talk to this dude for a second? Waves him over. And that conversation, it just sets up the rest of the movie, right? It sets up all the conflict and kind of Cal's redeeming moment. So I love that scene. Just that their banter back and forth, the couple of jokes that they share. When Cal says... or when Ryan says, I know David Lynn Hagen. Do you know how I know him? And Cal says, is he sleeping with your wife too? And then that laugh after makes me laugh every single time. And their banter and their chemistry in that moment is so magnetic, and it makes me want to keep watching. Like, if I get in on that point, I'm in for the rest of the movie, basically.
See, I'm having a tough choice between the three, the makeover, when Hannah goes home with Jacob, and then the Cal Jacob Lynn Hagen affair. Like, it's a cycle in my mind. Once when I think I settle on one, I'm like, but wait, what about what about this part? Like, it might be when Hannah goes home with Jacob. That might be like the most beautiful, genuine scene in this movie. But the makeover scene is iconic. It is Gosling at the height of his powers, and then the fight scene is just the wildest part of this movie. It's when things go completely on the rails. I am going to abstain from a vote.
Oh,
it's my podcast. I can do what I want. I'm going to put it. I'm going to put it on a poll on the Twitter account with the best scene in this movie.
There it is. Your house, your rules, man. Your house, your rules.
Exactly. I've got three favorites, and I'm going to stick with it. Let's take a quick ad break, and we'll be right back.
Big Screen Sports is presented by DoorDash. You've counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. So true story, I was craving wings the other night, and did you know that Chili's operates a wing joint that is like exclusively through DoorDash? It was actually pretty good. I live right near Chili's, had no idea. You can only get these wings through DoorDash. I probably should have looked and see what it's called, but it's good. Trust me, go to DoorDash. If you live near a Chili's, you'll get it. But you can also choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, like Chili's, and your food is on the way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you order the DoorDash app in the App Store. Enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that is code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Big Screen Sports is presented by BetOnline.ag. The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. Just don't bet on the Cowboys' money line, or they will break your heart like they did today against the Seahawks. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. Again, that is unless you're putting it on the Cowboys' money line. Do not do that. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget, use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Okay, best quote in this one. This is not a quotable, like a super quotable. When Harry met Sally, that the end monologue that Harry gives at New Year's or anything like that. It doesn't have at the end of You've Got Mail, when Meg, what did she says, like, I was so hoping it was you or something. Right. It doesn't have have one of those things. I noted two things. One of them is just a funny line when Gosling and Carell are talking about their various conquests, and he says, I felt like I was doing it with the two guys, the old guys from the Muppet
show. Muppets.
And then when Gosling comes to see Cal at the bar, when Cal's at the bar at 2:30 in the afternoon, and it's the monologue about love and how he's implying that, like, he really wants to be just like Cal.
Right.
That thing. I thought that's really good. I don't know if that's the best quote. It's more of a monologue thing. Did you have a favorite quote in this one?
You know, I think it's a bunch of like little one-liners, I think. So, and they're kind of spread throughout the movie. I think Robbie's very first line in the movie, after he gets caught by Jessica jerking it in his room, and he says,
which is the toughest of looks.
Right. And he said, I'm sorry you had to see that. That made me laugh so hard. Are you Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple Computers? That line, I mean, maybe that might just be a personal line, because I repeat that all the time to anyone who I know has seen this movie. And whenever I see New Balances, I say that to my wife. She doesn't even laugh anymore. She's so annoyed by that. So it's those two. And then I do really, really like the one that you mentioned with Jacob's final speech to Cal, explaining that he's in love with her, and the way he just trails off and says, you know, he wants to say, like, I spent all this time trying to make you like me, when in reality I wanted to be like you. And the way that he trails off and doesn't complete the sentence, and he doesn't say be like you, and says, where's that shot or whatever he says, is a really memorable moment. Credit to Gosling for that. Like, that was a great choice by him in that moment. It was just really, really good.
I'm just, look, Cal, it's not something that I wanted, okay? It's not something I looked at people who were in love, and I thought the way that they were behaving and the things that they were doing and saying, they appeared pathetic, honestly. And I spent all this time with you, and I'm trying to make you more like me, and it turns out I just want to be, I need that drink. You gonna make me do this? Like, I really do this?
It's a really effective delivery. I also want to throw out one more. Right. When Gosling takes off his shirt, and then she's like, fuck, seriously? It's like you're photoshopped.
Right, which I believe is in the trailer, right? Which is kind of like
so.
The...
I think so,
it's kind of the hook, because you're like, I mean, she has a point. Like, this dude hasn't eaten a carb in 9 years or something.
Except we just saw him eating Sbarro, which is incredible.
Right, so I have questions about Jacob's diet. I mean, I know he was doing push-ups on his head during that one gym scene, but... Like, he eats a lot of shitty food, it seems like. There's that scene in the beginning where he's eating burgers and fries. He presumably drinks alcohol every single night.
Every night. And it's like, an old-fashioned is not like a low-cal drink.
Right, that's no Clears and a lime. That's a lot of sugar, it's a lot of mixed stuff. So he's either running 9 miles a day, or maybe he's on keto. Maybe the pizza was made out of cauliflower crust. Like, we don't know. I'm just trying to figure out Jacob's diet. That might be the next deep dive I do after we get off here.
That might be the least authentic thing. The most and least authentic aspects of this film. Obviously, it's easier to judge with a sports movie, but what did you have for you? What's the most authentic thing about this movie?
Oh, the most authentic. I might have mentioned this earlier with it being one of my favorite, if not my favorite scene, was Gosling being able to pull all those girls with ease that he did in that bar. Ease. This guy was bringing his A game every single night. Jacob Palmer, as far as I'm concerned, he's the Michael Jordan of picking up girls at a bar. Like, he gave his all every night, no matter who was there. None of this load management crap and not going home with anyone. He was winning and going home with somebody if he had to stay until last call. Like, that just made the most sense. He fit that part so well.
That's the most authentic. Believable. It was very authentic. That rolls into what I had is most authentic. The most authentic thing about this movie is confidence in getting your actual size in a suit is a game changer in anything.
Huge.
Like with women, with work, with just feeling good about yourself. It is a, and you can see that it was when Carell, after the encounter with Marissa Tomei, the thing is with like this movie, you knew Carell could do the schlubby getting divorced dad. That was not going to be a problem.
Yep.
That is like, when's the last time? This was definitely the first time you saw Carell in this confidence on film. Like that screen when he walks into the bar after the Tomei encounter, he's wearing a good suit. He's got confidence. Like, it makes a clear difference, and it's a great job by Carell. But just in life in general, being confident, having the right suit, it is an absolute game changer.
I think after this movie, I figured out also that I was wearing the wrong size in suits and started getting my shit tailored, where like my sleeves are running long. I'm a short dude, so my pants were just super long, and I didn't think anything of it. I was like, I'm wearing a suit. This is good enough. After seeing the amount of care that Gosling was putting into his suit picking, I was like, I gotta change my life.
Legitimately one of the best dressed dudes in history. It's like him and Leonardo DiCaprio and Great Gatsby. It's just amazing.
Right.
For the least authentic, I have more of a question for you.
Okay.
Where are Cal's boys? He got no friends.
Yeah. Well, he had the one friend, right? He had Bernie, who is a traitor. And honestly, I could not have been more upset with Bernie.
Oh, you know what? My mistake. Where are Jacob's boys? Cal had
Jacob.
Cal, right. I get that. Yeah, that's my mistake. Where are Jacob's boys? Because Cal not having, he's been tied up. He's been married. He had Bernie. Bernie lost the vote with his wife.
Right.
Where are Jacob's boys? At the very least, he should have like some hangers-on friends.
That is true, but maybe he's careful with his money. He knows he's aware of how much money he has and that he could have hangers-on. You know, and maybe that's his job, is just to keep these toxic leeches out of his life. If that's his actual job and just kind of maintaining his money, having some fun, I can kind of respect that. And maybe he's just, I'm building a backstory for Jacob Palmer, one of those handsome characters like in the history of movies. Like, this is why he just spends his time like picking up women, because he doesn't have that backbone of just friends that he can watch a game with or go to the gym with. Maybe after his dad passed away, something within him happened where he wouldn't allow that to happen. I don't know. I'm building out a fake backstory.
You might be keying in on something that it's, for all guys out there, it's like, it's your dumbass friends that are dragging you down in life.
Yeah.
That might be it. Also, like, I don't want to second guess him because he is the most handsome, best dressed, confident guy in the history of cinema. But I feel like he's running that game at the same bar every night. Word would get around. Like, there are going to be girls don't care, but there would be pockets of girls who are at the same bar being like, oh, there's the guy who's by himself and went home with her and her both last week. Like, he's running the same game at the same bar. I feel like he'd get found out. But again, Jacob Palmer he's a Hall of Famer. So who am I to say what would happen to him? Did you have anything for least authentic of this one?
Mine was, and maybe this is just an excuse for me to talk about Marissa Tomei, but her going to a bar to meet someone, right? But she's not drinking and she's been 5 years sober. Like, I don't want to judge. I don't want to be judgy. I have questions. Like, if you're there to meet someone, you know, in a bar, the first move is, let me buy you a drink. And then you have to have this awkward conversation of like, oh, I'm 5 years sober, which she does have, right? And so if it wasn't Cal, does that raise red flags? Like, how hard are you trying to meet someone? I'm sure there were dating sites back then. It was what, 2010, 2011 when they filmed this movie? Or like, none of your friends could introduce you to someone? Again, we don't know her backstory as well. Like, we don't know why she's single. Is she divorced? Does she have a past? So again, don't want to be judgy, but I just assume that there were like other classic methods of meeting someone that didn't involve a bar. Albeit, I haven't had to try to date in like a really, really long time, but I just had questions about what she was doing in that bar.
Especially, like, I don't know, it might come down to, so like, she's in AA, so she goes to the meeting, right? She's meeting people there, but she's like, you know, after she gets sober, she gets some confidence back in herself, and she realizes, like, wait a minute, I'm an absolute rocket. I don't need to, you know, I don't need to be set up. I could pull someone. So that might be it. She looks a little nervous. Maybe it's her first night at that bar. Different night, she's probably going home with Jacob.
Oh, easily. But, you know, to your kind of piggybacking off your point of where are Jacob's friends, where are Kate's friends, right? Like, why would she want to go alone? That just doesn't seem safe to me.
Again, unless maybe all of her friends are the enablers that she has had to cut out of her life.
Sure.
She might not have any good sober friends.
There you go. That's a great point.
Oh, let's get into what worked about this one. I mean, the most obvious thing, like Gosling from the get-go, throwing flames.
Yes. He was throwing his fastball from the beginning, and he doesn't stop until, like, the only thing that stops him, he's like an inning away from throwing a no-hitter, and then Cal is the one that kind of throws him off his game, right? Like, because throughout all this, trying to, you know, sleeping with a bunch of women, he does want to find somebody to settle down with, like, he's, and share his life with. It's probably a lonely existence. He finds her, and then that whole Cal thing just, I'm sure, threw a wrench in his plans. But he's so good in this movie. It's crazy how good he is.
If he doesn't meet Cal and he doesn't meet Hannah, he's probably still doing this. And the older he gets, the kind of the sadder it gets. But I mean, from the get-go, we haven't even talked about the, right at the beginning of the movie, hits on Emma Stone as just a handsome, super smooth dude. It's just incredible. Yeah. Like, you've never seen someone like that before. The wardrobe is just unattainable perfection. I don't know anyone who dresses like that in real life, but it, like, not in a bad way. It's just, it's amazing. And I think the thing that is proof of how good he is in this movie, you know what he's doing isn't admirable. It is not like,
right,
as we literally find out, he is not who you would want to, you know, marry your daughter. That, like, what he is doing, right, like, if it was a less charming guy, you would be like, oh, that dude is a fucking scum lord. But because it's Gosling, you're just like, wow, he's too charming to just not be enthralled by him. And he is, I mean, yeah, he's the glue to this movie. It is an incredible performance.
Yeah, and I also, you know, want to give Carell his credit as well, because, you know, something you said earlier, which I thought was really, really well thought out, is, you know, we buy Steve Carell as like the schleppy dude, the divorced dude whose life may or may not fall apart, because we've seen him do that before, right? Like, we've seen him in 40 Year Old Virgin. I'm convinced, like, the first, before he gets the makeover, it's very 40 Year Old Virgin adjacent, right? It's kind of like the For same sure. guy. And then also, if you watch The Office, you see Michael as this like goofy dude who can't find love either. And that transformation of him to go from that to like just super smooth, and like the clothes that he wears seem believable, if that makes sense, right? Like the persona and the way he acts is incredible too, but to make it to, for him and probably wardrobe, I'm assuming, to find clothes that were like, oh, that's not too crazy. Like, I can buy him wearing that as, you know, a middle-aged divorced dude, was just, he delivers on a level that is incredible as well.
Yeah, going into this movie, if someone tells you like, oh, hey, by the way, Carell's going to have to carry a load as like for about 30 minutes of this movie as a suave ladies man, you would have been like, eesh, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. And it works. I also, another thing I love about this movie, the Miyagi concept, that montage of him basically saying, let's get out of here with women. It works so much better than a scene of like him telling Cal how to talk to women. It would not be as, I don't, it wouldn't, like the part where, you know, Jacob asks like, what have you seen me do? And Cal does the thing, and it's the Miyagi thing. When he finishes with those, so overjoyed to have had the opportunity, and then he's like, oh, you Miyagi'd me.
At the end of the night, what do? Do I ask them to come home with me?
No, you tell them to come home with you. They have no choice in the matter. It is your choice, and they are so overjoyed to have had the opportunity to make sweet, sweet love to you. Oh, my God. You did. You Miyagi'd me.
Huh. That is much better, because it would not have sounded good if Jacob was like telling him that, like, yeah, you just have to, you know, not care and just be a dick.
And manipulate. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That wouldn't have come on well. So the whole Miyagi-ing concept kind of rolls over smoothly what they're doing, which is, again, not an admirable thing, but they're charming with it.
Yeah. The Jacob's face, or Gosling's face, when Carell's explaining it back to him, like the pure joy that he has as well. Like, wow, I literally taught this dude everything.
It's
fantastic. It's just like this shit-eating grin, but he also knows like he's helping this dude out. It's an incredible look by Gosling.
It's
incredible.
Great. What else did you have that works for this one?
Oh, Marissa Tomei.
So great. So great.
I think she's so good in this movie. She's so beautiful. She's really funny. And that scene with her, Julianne Moore, and Steve Carell during the parent-teacher conference is so fun. Like, you can feel the tension. Like, that first interaction they have, incredible, right? Like, the reaction from her and Carell of, oh, my God. And then her in there trying to hold it together, not trying to rat this dude out, but trying to prove that he's a dick. And then the asshole monologue, or that speech, just incredible, and her losing it.
She starts throwing knives.
Oh my God. And then the at the end, at the graduation, the subtle flipping him off, just kind of rotating it from left to right. Oh, so good. She blew it out of the park. She went Dion Waiters, J.R. Smith, like 9 threes in 2 minutes. It was a phenomenal performance.
I mean, she is, we're going to get to this in a minute, but she is going to be potentially a two-time winner of the Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character, and like two times in 3 months, I think. She is crushing it.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking, like, if it is honestly not the worst scenario at all to be able to naturally let your cheating ex-wife know that you had sex with Marissa Tomei, but Cal handles it about as poorly as you could possibly handle it.
When he says she's a recovering alcoholic, I lose it every time. He realizes, you can see the thought process where he's like, I think I'm going to save face, and he can't. So he throws her under the bus so viciously. It's a phenomenal exchange.
It's tough. It is tough for Cal. I want to roll into what didn't work. And right off the bat, for me, almost the entirety of the Robbie Jessica thing, it's not happening. It's not the kid having a crush on his babysitter works. That's authentic. But almost every way they went about it was wrong.
I think I thought that relationship and that storyline was a lot funnier when I was younger and when this movie first came out. Watching it back didn't really age. Doesn't age well. The whole she likes someone who's literally could be her dad. None of that. And like it's like this weird, disgusting Game of Thrones love triangle, right? It's like the son, the babysitter, and the dad. And the dad has no idea. I'm with you. It makes for some humor. It adds some humor. It doesn't really add to the rest of the movie.
And the kid is not endearing with it. He's gross about it. It's a good concept. Kid has a crush on his babysitter, but they make mistakes. It's a funny concept. Babysitter catches kid masturbating. Like that's a nightmare.
Sure.
If you're a kid, but then him doing like the, I think about you or whatever, like, okay, sir.
So creepy.
Sir.
So creepy.
We're not doing so that. Creepy. And he's basically harassing her all movie with the text messages and the scene I fast forwarded when he does that, like he's out in the courtyard of the school.
At the school.
I straight up fast forwarded. I was like, I'm not doing this. I can't do it.
I just think it's funny that he built a full scaffold for this show.
Like, it is impressive dedication.
You built that as a 13-year-old? Like obviously it didn't matter. It didn't last. And it was stupid, but I was just impressed by his ingenuity to be like, you know, what's going to get this girl to like me? A scaffold. And he didn't really need it either. Right. Like he just used it to drop the curtain. I feel like he could have fashioned a dropping curtain in a less like where he had to do less work.
He could have saved himself some time.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that whole part of this movie is what makes it just an all-star for me. The whole thing falls flat. There are a couple other just questions I have for you about stuff that might not have worked. Say you're at the gym back when we could go to the gym and you saw a dude doing handstand push-ups against the mirror of the gym.
Mm-hmm.
What is your reaction? Because again, when it's Jacob Palmer, when it's Gosling, you're just like, oh yeah, but it, like if I'm at the gym, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? What are you doing, sir?
Right. I'm immediately shit-talking about him in a couple of text threads. Not just one, a few. Because, like, do that at your house. Like, you can do that in the privacy of your own home. We get it, man. You're ripped. You don't eat carbs. Like, you probably have protein shakes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And, you know, your cardio game is through the roof. Like, we get it. So if I see that, one, I'm walking away. Too. Like, I don't know how good this dude's balance is. He could fall on anyone at any given point.
It's very dangerous. So
it's insanely dangerous. So am I reporting him to the gym management? No, I'm not that. I'm not an asshole.
You're not a narc.
Right, exactly. But I am talking shit. I might even take a picture to send to the group text.
Oh, yeah. You're definitely trying to get a picture of that guy.
Yeah.
Even a video if possible. You're trying mm-hmm. to expose him on this.
Yeah.
Another question I have for you about what didn't work, and I don't know if it for sure doesn't work, but when you think about what happens after this movie, could Emma Stone reconcile that her boyfriend and dad spent the past few months chasing tail together?
Wow. That is good.
Because she's going to start thinking, she's going to be like, oh, wait, okay, so family Thanksgiving, like we're talking about the turkey and like, say you catch Cal and Jacob, like sharing a laugh or an inside joke. She's going to be like, oh, is this about the time where they were just like having sex with strangers to get together and like sharing in that camaraderie?
Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be, I'm not going to say easy to get over because it's not like they engaged in some like weird orgy together.
That's right. Fair.
They had
That's
their
fair.
Own individual relations with women. And, you know, Jacob was a single man allowed to gallivant how he pleased. And he did take his shot at Hannah in the beginning.
That's so true. She knew what she signed up for.
She knew what she signed up for.
She just didn't know that he was teaching her father to do that same thing.
Right, but I'm sure she realizes her father during this time was hurting. he was trying to figure it out. I'm sure they've had conversations about, hey, you know, your mom's the one that wanted this. Maybe he doesn't tell her about the affair, but he's just trying to get his life together and himself together. So I think she could come to terms with it pretty quickly. And maybe you just don't have these conversations. Maybe you just take it as it happened and let's move forward, because that would lead to some weird conversations.
Yeah, you leave that one at home. Did you have anything else that didn't work on this movie?
Yeah, so I had one, and I don't know if it... I'm just gonna say it. David Lindhagen. Okay? So on the surface, he seems like a nice guy, but like when you really peel the layers back, in reality, he's a homewrecker, and he's a cocky homewrecker.
He's scummy. When he shows up... Okay, when he shows up, man, bringing that sweater back, you don't walk into that situation.
What are you doing?
You don't make yourself known.
And so there's that, right? Like, he sees the family fighting, literally fighting. Like, there's another dude trying to kill Cal, and you're like, hey, you know what? Did you leave the sweater in my car? You know what you're doing. And rewind even more. Did you see how much confidence he had talking to Robbie in the office?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's, like, you really think this kid is going to like you after you broke up his parents' marriage? And so I also, is David Lindhagen a sneak peek of who Jacob would have become if he didn't meet Hannah? Just a skeevy, good-looking asshole who's, like, down to break up marriages. It could be.
He's David Lindhagen if David Lindhagen didn't have to work.
Right.
David Lindhagen would have had more time to go to the bar and pick up chicks instead.
Sure.
Because he's an accountant, he's working long hours. All he's got is Julianne Moore, who we really haven't talked about much, but she does a fine job, I would say.
She does a good job. I think she ranges for me in terms of I just don't like her. I don't know if I think Julianne Moore is fantastic. I think her character I didn't like because of how she just treated Cal from the beginning, and then her reactions to a bunch of stuff that unfolds. Like, first of all, you want a divorce from your husband, that's totally fine. Like, people get divorces all the time. Why would you do it in public on like what's clearly a date night? Like, wait till you get home, and then you just start spilling your guts about this affair that you've had with a coworker, and then she has the audacity to get mad at him for sleeping with other women at the school. Like, what is happening here? And, you know, she does have the one scene that pulls me back every time is when she calls him kind of just to hear his voice. And she makes up the fact that, well, she has to fix the power went out or something like that. So she's just having him walk through the steps, and he's watching her through the window because he's in the backyard.
That's
so that
the
one
first
always
time
pulls
you
me
think
back.
Things might end up being good.
Right. And that's the catalyst for Cal building the golf course in the backyard later, which then gets destroyed by Jessica's dad. So, but Julianne Moore, like you said, fine performance. I thought she played the role well.
Yeah, it's funny. The three roles I think of when I think of Julianne Moore, I'm not like a Julianne Moore stan. I haven't, you know, extensively browsed her filmography. I didn't watch the movie that she recently won best actress for, but I think
Still Alice. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think of this, I think of, Boogie Nights, and I think of The Kids Are All Right. And in all three of those, she is a woman who is kind of like distressed, making some bad decisions. Obviously in Boogie Nights, she is making some horrendous decisions, but it's interesting that's what I think of when I think of Julianne Moore. I'm just going to go ahead and skip the Kevin Costner Freddie Prinze Jr. Awards for best and worst on-screen job depiction. Like, Jacob Palmer, great pickup artist. If Marissa Tomei was my middle school teacher, I don't know what would have happened to me, but if... Whew.
Oh, there... I mean, the fact that, first of all, that no one knew that was Robbie's teacher.
That's, like, Cal hadn't met her another thing. Like, Cal, the dads would have talked. Does be like, hey, you guys heard about the English teacher?
Right. You gotta have one of these interviews because she's
you gotta tell your kid to start sucking in English because
right. Just for a couple weeks, just so you have the meeting, and then, you know, he or she's gotta kick it into high gear. But Marissa Tomei, just every time she's on screen, from I've loved, my love for her actually started when George Costanza was obsessed with her and she came on the show in Seinfeld. Just an incredible, incredible woman. She's great.
My love for her started with my cousin Vinny as Mona Lisa Vito, for which she was awarded the Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character on this very podcast a few months ago. Here are my nominees. Here's who I've got. Marissa Tomei as Kate. Like I said, Hall of Famer in this category. We've said enough. Kevin Bacon is David Lindhagen. John Carroll Lynch is Bernie. Again, you need to see Zodiac. He is just a fantastic character actor. He's super capable in a variety of different roles. And then my last nominee, someone we haven't talked about at all, Josh Groban as the cheese dick oblivious boyfriend.
Oh, man. I have nothing against Josh Groban, personally.
Whenever loves Josh Groban. Like, so that's what I think. So does my mom. Josh Groban. Yeah. Moms fucking love Josh Groban.
Moms love them some Grobes. And that's totally fine. Just whenever he's acting, and he's not a bad actor either, right? He just plays such a convincing asshole where I'm like, every time he shows up, I'm like, this fucking guy. Like, I just throw my hands up. And he's a really good asshole in this movie. I literally hadn't thought about him until now. Because I tried to erase him from my mind. But man, those are four really good nominees.
It is.
Really good ones.
The supporting cast in this one is great. I mean, my pick, and she handles the rock the most, is Marissa Tomei. She does get the most to do. She basically gets, she gets two big scenes, plus the middle finger at the eighth grade graduation. I would say my runner up is Bacon, is David Lindhagen, for the reasons you said earlier.
Yeah, I got to go with Kate as well. Side note, wouldn't she have gotten fired after that whole fiasco at the teacher conference, the parent teacher conference?
I think so too. Her job is in jeopardy at that point because everyone would have heard about it.
Right, she yelled at a parent in. And then she like made it public. She also engaged in intercourse with one of her students' parents, which opens up a whole other bag of weird stuff to unpack. So, but that being said, great character in Crazy Stupid Love. Maybe not such a good middle school teacher. I don't know.
There's a lot going on at that school. That like the worst eighth grade graduation of all time. A lot of problems. With that.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't good. I'm surprised they still let Robbie be salutatorian.
I know.
He said asshole like 9,000 times in disrespect of his teacher. And so that was a little bizarre.
Yeah. How are you letting that kid speak? do you have like a big chill moment in this movie? Because even like in rom-coms, you get, a lot of times it's when like the big chill moment of When Harry Met Sally is that moment at the end where Harry gives her that speech on New Year's. You know, when you find the person you want to spend the rest of your life with, you want to start doing it right now or whatever that, that great one is. That's a big chill moment. I don't know if I have a chill moment in this one. I have like when Jacob asks Hannah to ask him something personal. That's kind of close for me, but I don't know if this movie has that moment. Is there anything for you?
No, I mean, I agree. There's a lot of big moments, and I think those kind of take away that there could be a chill moment because you're so focused on that. I think if we're talking about scenes at the end of the movie that could be that, the scene where Cal finally gives his approval of Jacob and Hannah's relationship. Gives her the hug, shakes Jacob's hand, and then slaps him in the face like he had done to him earlier, is the closest that, I mean, I think the stuff with Jacob and Hannah when they go home together is also really good, but there's no When Harry Met Sally moment that kind of just stands the test of time.
Yeah, which is kind of what makes this one a more new age rom-com too. It doesn't right. fall into that trope. How would you improve this one?
I think it would have to be removing the Robbie Jessica stuff, or at least making it less creepy. Like toning it down.
That was my exact note. You got to make Robbie and Jessica thing less creepy.
Toning it down a little bit, and I think that would just make it, I'd be able to stomach it a little bit more. And it probably would have aged better. Because again, that whole age gap between her and the dad, and then like, then it at the, you know, you pour gas under the fire with like the nude pics, and you're like, oh my God, this is going to a weird, weird place for everyone. Just literally everyone. So I think that would be my one thing.
It gets off the wall uncomfy with that stuff. Last category before more of a story. Would you rather see a prequel, sequel, or remake, or none of the above of this movie? I think a remake, this movie's 9 years old. I think that's out of the question.
Right. It's too soon for a remake. The prequel, I think, would be kind of boring unless it's like the birth of Jacob Palmer.
I was like, going to say, see, it's like, Jacob why... at like age 23, 24, just mowing down chicks.
Right, yeah, and he's working his way up to this fancy bar. So
yeah, it's him at an LA dive bar working right. on his craft. He's got a mentor. There's an older yeah. Jacob that he's learning from.
He's closing on like the train tracks. He's not even going back to the house, you know. And then he's going back into the bar. He's getting multiple girls a night, and then he realizes maybe at the end of the movie it's just too much. And he scaled it down. I was thinking sequel, though, and I'll tell you why. At the end, when Cal's, he gives the nod of approval for their relationship, for Hannah and Jacob, and then Hannah says, oh, this is going to be fun. That for some reason, the way she said it just felt like she was setting up a sequel. And I know that there's not going to be. And like, what would it be, right? Maybe it's Jacob passing on his sexual prowess to Robbie and then Robbie is all of a sudden that dude.
I was gonna say, or, you recast Robbie with like whoever younger Efron is right now. You recast Robbie with him,
maybe a little Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah. That's the play. Also, like, the sequel could be Jacob and Cal figuring out how to talk about something else besides like hooking up with chicks,
right? Yeah. Oh yeah, that would be phenomenal. I mean, I don't think ultimately, I think the answer is none of the above.
Yeah, you leave this one alone.
But I think a prequel would be funny. I think a sequel would be fun. They probably wouldn't be good, but I think they'd be at least watchable.
Yeah. Well, the movie we got is fantastic. I'm happy you came on the pod. I'm happy we made this happen. Got to talk about it for this month's non-sports movie. Ben, tell the folks again where they can follow you on social media, where they can check out your podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Cruise Control. That's Control with a K. You can listen to our show, mine and Jeremy's wrestling show, for all you wrestling nerds out there. That, again, is Two Jabronis with a Wrestling Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Two Jabronis Pod. I guess I'll shout out my tag team partner, my co-host, Jeremy. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeremy Alos. Tell him that he's a freaking David Lindhagen. And, you know, again, find us wherever you download your pods. But of course, after you listen to this one, right? Like, have your priorities straight. And dude, Kyle, thank you so much for having me on, man. This was a lot of fun. I don't think I've prepped this hard for a pod ever, if I'm being honest. And again, this is the first time my wife had any interest in what I was doing on the podcast side of things. So I got to shout you out for that.
I typically take a lot of notes. I think I have taken, like, this is at least the most notes I've taken in like 2 months. I love this movie, Ben. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember, subscribe, rate, review, wherever you get your podcast. You guys know the drill. Also, if you're a baseball fan, check out my interview series From Phenom to the Farm, presented by Baseball America. Comes at you every other Tuesday. Last Tuesday, I talked to former Major League All-Star Billy Butler. Country Breakfast was a great interview. Check that one out. New episodes of Big Screen Sports drop every other Monday. If you want to vote on next month's non-sports movie, join the Big Screen Sports Facebook group. And until then, we'll catch you next Monday. Thanks.